romance or science fiction or any other category like that. And I really love literary fiction, but it's becoming increasingly difficult to sell it, so I'm extremely selective.
Why is that?
Because publishers are less willing to take chances on new writers, I think, than they were before, or on books that they don't perceive have a huge market. And it's very hard with an unknown quantity, a new author, to know in advance that the market will be, what the market will be, what will take off, what will ignite the reading public.
Mm-hmm.
And so they look for brand names. They look for something that has a hook to it. And so it's very difficult to place really good fiction, what is known as the dreaded mid-list.
Right.
Kind of in nonfiction, I handle everything from self-help and parenting books to popular culture to serious biography. It's really, I look for really excellent writing on subjects that are interesting to me and that I feel would be saleable.
Mm-hmm. Back to literary fiction, what sort of things help someone to make a sale? Do having published short stories, do contests, awards, that kind of thing?
You know, sometimes it does. Sometimes if someone, their writing has come to the attention of a lot of editors in New York via literary magazines, that's helpful. One of my biggest sales in the last couple of years was a novel called Please, Please, Please by a young writer named Renee Swindle, who lives in the Bay Area. It will be published this July. And she never published anything before. Not a thing, not a word, not a story. It was a very... very distinctive voice that she had in her fiction, and that's what made the editor sit up and take notice.
Mm-hmm.
I think that with literary fiction, some editors look to see if a writer has been published in literary magazines. Obviously, if you're a young writer and you get published in one of the major magazines, like The New Yorker mm-hmm. or Harper's, then you're on your way.
Right.
But I don't think it's absolutely necessary.
What's the market like for young adult novels or children's books?
I haven't a clue. I don't handle any children's books. It's a whole separate field.
Short story collections?
Short story collections are very, very tough. Again, that's a case where if you do get published frequently in literary magazines, you have a better chance of getting a short story collection published than if you just present a story collection
mm-hmm.
to a publisher. They don't, even with fairly well-known writers, story collections do not sell in significant numbers, and publishers are less willing to publish collections.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of times they will publish a collection if the author will also agree to write a novel.
Mm-hmm.
Novels are easier to sell.
Mm. So, in terms of fiction, is it romance fiction that is, you know, the big thing, or is it mysteries, or
you know? Romance fiction is huge. It's another area I know absolutely nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't handle any category romance. From what I read in you know, trade publications, their market continues to grow. I think mysteries have always done well, although some publishers are cutting back their mystery lists while others are beefing theirs up. I think the thriller genre is always hot. Publishers are always looking for, you know, great thriller writer, whether it be a legal thriller writer like John Grisham or a Michael Crichton or Tom Clancy.
Mm-hmm. How has publishing changed since you became an agent?
Oh, my gosh, it's changed so much since I started. I started in publishing over 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's become so much more corporate and Hollywoodized than it used to be. It really used to be that an editor could read something that they loved, that they saw had promise. And maybe the book wasn't perfect, but they felt that they could work with this writer and develop them. And maybe the first book wouldn't sell all that well, or maybe the second or third, but by the fourth or fifth book, that author would find an audience and would grow. And those days, I'm afraid, are over. Publishers want the first book to be successful, and they don't want to take the time and the effort to develop writers.
Yeah, I've heard...
That's a big difference that I see.
I've heard so many stories of novelists whose first or second book didn't do well and publishers no longer want to publish their books, and some of them change their names.
Is that factual? I've heard that many times, and in fact, it's, you know, for some writers, it's not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because nowadays, with the advent of computers, and publishers can look up someone's sales figures, it's at their fingertips. It's
right.
be that way. That's another huge change in publishing. And what somebody's last book sold has become very important. Mm-hmm. That didn't used to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody had a book and it maybe didn't do that well, but their next book was really great. Well, that would be okay. I always use the example of Anne Tyler, who didn't succeed until her ninth book. And in this climate, this publishing climate, she likely would never have had her third or fourth novel published.
Mm-hmm. So once a writer gets an agent and the agent sells the book and advances is given to the writer and then the book's on the stands, how important is it that that advance is paid back to the publisher through sales? Is that something they just pay absolute attention to?
Well, you know, the publisher makes money even if the advance doesn't earn out. It's always good if the advance earns out because it means that the author will then make more money. And as a representative of authors, I'm always looking for my clients to make more money. The publishers, they would also, of course, prefer to see it, but it's not essential. I don't think that earning out the advance means as much to them. Because they will still make money on a book even if the advance doesn't earn out.
Mm-hmm. What do they want then? Do they want good reviews? Do they want the book to kind of inch its way up to the bestseller list, if not hit the bestseller list?
Well, you know, the bestseller list is, I mean, every publisher wants their books to be on the bestseller list because it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. When a book hits the bestseller list, it then can stay on there. It's a huge marketing tool for a publisher. They can use that to great advantage. But it's not essential. I think a lot, some publishers look for certain kinds, especially in nonfiction, for books that will just continue to sell steadily for years and years and years and become a backlist book.
Mm-hmm.
And they make a tremendous amount of money from those types of books.
Sure.
Sometimes the flash in the pan, the book that hits it big and is a big bestseller and then dies off, isn't as attractive to a publisher.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about agents.
Okay.
What is the one myth or many myths you believe writers have about agents that you would like to explode right here and now?
I think one of the biggest myths is that agents can do everything.
Mm-hmm.
That we not only sort of help to put the project together and sell it to a publisher and collect the royalties and do all that, but that we also publish the book. That we're the publicist, the publisher, that we sort of have some sort of power over all of that. And I wish that we did, but essentially when a book is sold to a publisher, they are then in charge. And if they don't do such a great job, there's really not that much the agent can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes the authors have expectations of their agents that can't be fulfilled.
Yeah.
A lot of times publishers don't do such a bang-up job.
Do you advise clients, once they get their book published, to invest in a publicist?
Oh, if they can. If they can and it makes sense. I think for certain kinds of fiction, it doesn't really make sense. I think it's really throwing money away. But for nonfiction, if there is a way in which that publicity can really be worthwhile, there's maybe something in the news that's going on and the only way to get the word out there is through a publicist. If the publisher's publicity department is really not doing anything, which is often the case, and having been the head of a publicity department at a major house, I know how that works. I always advise clients of mine that if they want to hire a publicist, they should.
Hmm.
Expensive.
Yeah.
And there's no guarantee that a publicist will make or break a book. Sometimes all the publicity in the world doesn't result in sales.
Mm-hmm.
There's really no way of knowing how that's going to turn out in the end.
If you've just turned in, you're listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM, KUCI, in Irvine. My guest tonight is Los Angeles literary agent B.J. Robbins. B.J., do agents ever turn down projects they like, but they're simply too busy?
Probably. I've never turned down something because I'm too busy. Oh, no, that's not true. Sometimes you get overwhelmed and feel like you just have too many projects going on at the same time. I think if something came my way that I absolutely loved and had to represent, I don't think it would matter how many projects I had going on. But I'm sure that there are agents that do that. I know that there are agents who simply don't look at new material. They feel that they have enough going on, enough clients, and the writers that they represent are constantly writing new books, and so they turn people away. I oftentimes turn down things that I think are very good, but I just don't feel I can sell them well. And I think that the author is then better served by having an agent who has a clearer vision for the project.
Are agents more interested in a single project of a writer, or do they look at the writer as someone that they might be able to work with in the long term on multiple projects?
I prefer to look at writers as I'm really working with them for a career, not just one book. Sometimes that makes a writer very uncomfortable or sort of nervous. And if that's the case, then I'm happy to represent them for one project at a time.
Why would it make them nervous?
I don't know.
It seems like a security blanket of sorts.
I would think so. But just because that's their personality and what they would prefer, and I honor that if that's what they want to do. But I prefer to, especially with fiction, because it is such a commitment on my part, not that it isn't for nonfiction, but with fiction it's so difficult that I really want to represent the writer and not simply the project.
Is it usual for an agent to represent all of a writer's projects, their fiction and nonfiction, their scripts, or is it more typical for authors to have one agent for each thing?
I think it's probably best to have one agent for all books. Although if somebody has in my case, if they are writing children's books, they should probably have a separate agent for that, because I would not know what to do with a children's book. And I don't handle screenplays or television writing, so a number of my clients have separate screenplay agents. So it is an advantage. I think it's difficult if you have try to have different agents for different kind of books. Let's say you write fiction and nonfiction, and maybe you write some category fiction, and then you want to have an agent for that that's separate from your other kinds. I think it can get a little bit crazy.
Writers sometimes become impatient that their agent of, 3 months, 6 months, hasn't sold their book yet. How long, is there an average amount of time for an agent to sell a book?
That's hard to say. I mean, I've had cases where I've sold a book in 24 hours, and I've had other cases where it's taken me a year or 2 years. Sometimes it's the third submission, sometimes it's the 50th. I can completely understand why writers would get impatient. Of course, they want their book to sell. Sometimes it just takes a long time. I always multiply submit projects, meaning I send them to more than one editor at a publishing house at a time. But sometimes the editors will get back to me quickly, and sometimes they take a couple of months. Last year I had a case. I went to New York with 3 projects in January. One of them I sold the next week, and the other two, it took me 6 months to sell both of them. They both went to excellent houses for very good money. It just took that long. And it's hard to say. You never know. I think once a writer hands their project over to the agent, they should forget about it and not worry about it and start working on their next book and let the agent do their job. That doesn't mean that you can't call and check and say what's going on and is there something I need to do to maybe help the sale. Because sometimes when you send out a proposal or a book, you get a lot of feedback that says the same thing, and there's clearly something wrong with the proposal that could be improved. And so sometimes there's a revision process that goes on, and then the proposal is sent out again. And because I tend to send things out in batches, I don't just constantly send them out. Sometimes I need to wait a month or two in between submissions, just because I might have other projects with a particular editor, and I need to hear back from them on that. There are a lot of reasons why it takes a long time, but I understand why writers get impatient, but I always tell them not.
So once you send a project to a publisher, how long might it take you to hear from them?
Anywhere from the next day to a month later.
Mm-hmm.
I usually put an RSVP date on the letter that I send to them asking for a response by a particular time. Sometimes I give them a short period of time if I feel that it's a very timely project and they should get back to me quickly. Sometimes with fiction, if it's an entire novel, I usually give them a month. That doesn't mean that they'll read it in that month and get back to me. There are some editors out there who are renowned for taking endless amounts of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always calling them and bugging them.
And
the same thing happens when authors send their works to agents. I mean, I'm guilty of that. Sometimes things just take a long time for me to get to them.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the revision process a little earlier. Mm-hmm. How much should a writer expect that their agent will work with them on improving, say, their proposal or their manuscript?
If their agent has an editorial background, like many of us do, I think they should welcome having their agent give them advice on how to improve their proposal or their manuscript. I mean, after all, we are sort of on the front line. We're the ones sending things to publishers and know what they're looking for and know whether or not a project is ready. I think a lot of times projects come to me and they're really interesting, but they're just not ready yet. They need one more go-through. Maybe it's just to clean it up. It's simply a copy-editing task. And maybe it's just that the project hasn't been thought through enough, and it needs more components to make it attractive to a publisher. And I generally know what they want, because if a publisher's interested in the project, they always call me, and then they ask, well, what about this and what about that? So it's always good to have all the information in the original mailing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I always want to have that sort of aha factor where an editor opens a package for me and looks at a project and goes, oh, yes, I see this book. I see this. I want this. And if the proposal isn't there yet, or if the novel has some flaws that could be fixed, they'll just as easily say, well, it's not really ready. I'm going to pass.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that a lot of agents have an editorial background.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an important aspect in choosing an agent, and what would be things to look for in considering to sign with an agent?
Yeah, I don't know that it's essential for an agent to have an editorial background. I think it's tremendously helpful. I think that an agent who has been working inside a publishing house has a certain understanding of how it works, perhaps better than an agent who hasn't. I think that the main thing any writer should look for in an agent is enthusiasm, and that the agent really understands what they're doing and what they want. I oftentimes hear writers call me and they say, well, an agent in New York said that they liked my book a lot. It wasn't quite for them, so they'd be willing to send it out. And, you know, that to me is a kiss of death. If somebody doesn't say, I love your book, I absolutely have to represent this, I know exactly what to do with it and who to go to with it.
Mm-hmm.
Keep shopping around till you find the right agent. It's very important to have an enthusiastic agent.
And then also, describe your dream client. What should writers be like in order for you to
be compliant? No. I would say, this young writer, Renee Swindle, who I mentioned before, she's really wonderful. Learning about how the publishing process works because she's a first-time author, but she was just absolutely wonderful during the editorial process. And really, she didn't have tremendous expectations. She came to me with very modest expectations, and in fact, I was able to exceed them. And so, you know, everybody's happy. I think it's a question of sort of patience and understanding how the process works, and not, you know, and really being realistic. I think that's the main thing. Those are the clients, and I have a number of them. In fact, all of my clients are realistic and understand how it works. And sometimes they get frustrated, but that's the main thing.
Mm-hmm. Since most publishers are on the East Coast, writers sometimes hesitate in seeking a West Coast agent to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about this?
I don't think it matters anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think, I think in the old days when it was a really sort of, an old boys club, it was important for everybody to be in New York. But I think that editors really like working with West Coast agents. I think they look to us to bring them fresh and unusual material and things that they don't see from New York agents. With faxes and email and the phones, certainly we're not hampered in any way to communicate with editors in New York, except for the annoying time difference.
Mm-hmm.
But and in fact, I find that editors just love to come out to L.A. and hang out here, and that's been really valuable. And most of us who work out here go to New York frequently. We keep in touch. Mm. And in fact, for those of us who worked in New York, we also have that advantage of having known most of these people before we moved down here.
Right. You mentioned that most of what you represent is nonfiction. Are there any areas in nonfiction that are hot right now?
There are a lot of areas that are hot. I think that, self-help, psychology, books on health, spirituality, are pretty hot right now, if they're good, if the writer really has the credentials to write a book that's unusual and innovative, that's offering new material. I think the personal memoir has had its day. I think memoirs are still being published, but not in the numbers that they used to be published in past years. By the time I would identify what's hot, it'll probably not be hot anymore. That's the thing about trends in publishing. By the time they're identified, they're over.
Right.
Because books are bought usually a year or two before they're published,
mm-hmm.
especially nonfiction, because generally the manuscript is not completed when it's sold. It's sold on the basis of a proposal, which may only be 10 or 20 pages long.
Mm-hmm. We're at the end of our time. I wonder if you have any advice for our listeners.
Any advice? I would say to persist. If you really believe in what you're writing and what you're doing, just keep at it and keep trying and keep trying to improve your work. And don't worry if people say no.
Well, BJ, I thank you so much for talking with me and sharing your knowledge with my listeners.
You're very welcome, Barbara. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Next week, my guest will be mystery writer Julie Smith, author of 82 Desire. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett at KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. If you have any comments about Writers on Writing, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at bdemarcob@aol.com. Thanks for listening, and get to work. Remember, it's all about writing, like there's no tomorrow.